I'm one who believes that what's happening on the African continent has a direct bearing upon what happens to you and me in this country, and the degree to which they get independence and strength and recognition on that continent is inseparable from the degree to which we get independence and strength and recognition on this continent. And I hope, before the day is over, to clarify what I mean by that. But first, I would like to point out that since it's my understanding that most of you are training to be future leaders in the community, not only the community, but the country and in the world, some advice that I would give is that whenever you think you're going to occupy a position of responsibility in the future, one of the best areas in which you can train yourself is never to accept images that have been created for you by someone else. It's always better to form the habit of learning how to see things for yourself and listen to things for yourself, think for yourself, and then you're in a better position to judge for yourself. We're living at a time when image making has become a science. And someone can create certain images and then use that image to twist your mind and lead you right up a blind path. An example, a few weeks ago I was on a plane traveling from Algiers to Geneva. And there were two Americans sitting beside me, both white, one a male and the other a female. I had met the male in the airport, and we had struck up a conversation. He was an interpreter who worked for the United Nations and was based in Geneva. The lady was with the American embassy in one part of Algeria. So we conversed for about 40 minutes between Algiers and Geneva. A nice human conversation. I don't think they were trying to be white, and they weren't trying to prove that they weren't white. They weren't particularly trying to prove anything. It was just a conversation between three human beings. I certainly wasn't trying to make them think I wasn't black, and it just didn't come into it. So after we had this quiet, objective, friendly, sociable, and very informative conversation for about 40 minutes, the lady looked at my briefcase and said, I want to ask you a personal question. She said, what kind of name could you have, last name could you have that begins with X? This was bugging her. And I said, well, that's it, X, like that. So she said, well, what's your first name? I said, Malcolm. So she waited about 10 minutes, and she said, you're not Malcolm X. And I said, yes. She said, but you're not what I was looking for. And I told her right then and there the danger of believing what she hears someone else say, or believing what she reads someone else write, and not keeping herself in a position to weigh, see things and hear things and weigh them for herself. Last week when I was in England at Oxford University, we had a debate at the Oxford Union. And before the debate, I was with several of the students. We were discussing a variety of things for a couple hours at a dinner. And at the end, toward the end of the dinner, a girl that had been one of the diners pointed out, she said, you know, you're just not what I was looking for. So I asked her, what were you looking for? I knew what she was looking for. She was looking for the horns that had been created by the press. And those horns mean she was looking for someone who was out to kill all white people, who was a segregationist, a rabble-rouser, an irrational, an extremist, subversive, seditious, someone who couldn't hold a conversation with just anyone. This is what she was looking for, because she was looking for something whose image she only knew from what she had read by a very biased press, a press that has perfected image-making to a science. And then they use these images to make people love whom they will and hate whom they will, not based upon what the people themselves discover for themselves, but based strictly upon the image that the press wants to create and then project to the world. So in both instances, they didn't see the horns. Perhaps the horns were there, but they were well hidden. So I take that, I just take time to mention that because it's very dangerous for you and me to form the habit of reading, of believing anything completely about anyone or any situation when we only have the press as our source of information. It's always better, if you don't want to be completely in the dark, to read it, but don't come to a conclusion until you have an opportunity to do some personal, first-hand investigating for yourself. And if you ever are going to hold a position of leadership, along with which goes a great deal of responsibility, my advice to you would be just that, to be very careful about letting others create images for you. Always examine for yourself. The American press, in fact the FBI, use press to create almost any kind of image they want of anyone on the local scene. And then you have other police agencies of an international stature that's able to use the world press to create images of anyone whom they want or anything that they want. And if the press is able to project someone in the image of an extremist, no matter what that person says or does from then on, is considered by the public as an act of extremism. No matter how good it is, it's because it's done by this person who has been projected as an extremist, no matter what it is or how good it is or how positive it is or how constructive it is, the people who have been misled by the press have a mental block, and the press knows this. If the press can project someone as subversive or a group as subversive, no matter what that group does, is looked upon as subversive. They could run and save someone from drowning in the middle of the Hudson, but it's still, the act is looked upon with suspicion, because the press has been used to create suspicion toward that certain image. If a person is projected by the press in an image that's an image of irresponsibility, then no matter how responsible that person's actions may be, the people look upon that act as an act of as an irresponsible act. And I point these things out especially for you and me, those of us who are trying to come from behind and not get ahead, but at least get even. If we aren't aware, we'll find that all these modern methods of trickery that they have perfected to a science will be used, and we will be maneuvered into thinking that we're getting freedom or thinking that we're making progress, when actually we will be going backwards. Likewise, if they can project you in the image or project someone in a violent image or in the image of someone who goes for violence, and you accept that image, then whatever that person becomes involved in, as far as you're concerned, he believes in violence. He could save a baby from the path of a car, but you don't see someone saving the baby from the path of a car, you see someone who believes in violence. And these methods have been used very skillfully by the power structure, the national power structure, as well as the international power structure. And one of the things that you and I, as an oppressed people, should be on guard against, as I said, is to be very careful about letting anyone paint our images for us. The world press, as well as the American press, can make the victim of a crime look like the criminal, and can make the criminal himself look like he's the victim. You don't think that this is possible for someone to do that to your mind, but all you have to do is take the recent example of the Congo, of what happened in the Congo. The world press projected the scene in the Congo as one wherein the people who were the victims of the crime were made to appear as if they were criminals, and the ones who were the actual criminals were made to appear that they were the victims. The press did this. And by the press doing it, it made it almost impossible for the American public or the world public to analyze the Congo situation with clarity and keep it in its proper perspective. An example, if you notice, here we had African villages in the Congo that had no kind of air force whatsoever. They were completely without defense against air attack, and yet there were planes dropping bombs on these African villages. The people were defenseless. The bombs were destroying women, they were destroying children, they were destroying babies. But there was no great outcry here in America against such an inhuman act because the press very skillfully made it look like a humanitarian project. And they made it look like a humanitarian project by referring to the pilots that were dropping the bombs on these innocent and defenseless Africans as American trained. And as soon as they put the word American in there, that was supposed to lend it some kind of respectability or legality. And they call them American-trained anti-Castro Cuban pilots. And since Castro is a word that's almost like a curse, the fact that they were anti-Castro pilots made whatever they were doing an act of humanitarianism. But still, you can't overlook the fact that it was American-trained anti-Castro Cuban pilots. No matter what they were doing, or no matter who they were dropping bombs on villages in Africa that had no defense against bombs whatsoever. But they called this an act of humanitarianism. And the public was made to accept it as an act of humanitarianism. And I have to point this out because it's an example of how when the planes come from America and the bombs come from America and the pilots come from America, no matter whether or not they become involved in mass murder, the press, again, can maneuver your mind and manipulate your mind to make you think that that mass murder is some kind of humanitarian project, simply by making the image of the criminal appear to be the image of a humanitarian, and the image of the victim is made to look like he's the criminal. So it's very good to keep this in mind, because you can take it a step farther. One of the principal images in that particular scene over there is a man named Shambi, who's a murderer. Actually, he's a murderer. He murdered the rightful prime minister of the Congo. This cannot be denied. The rightful prime minister of the Congo was Patrice Lumumba. Now, the one who is responsible for having murdered him in cold blood, and the world knows it, was taken and put over the Congo as its premier by the United States government. And this gave him some kind of image of respectability because America sanctioned him. And not only did she sanction him, she supplied him with sufficient funds wherein he could then go to South Africa and import hired killers, mercenaries they call them. But a mercenary is a hired killer. A mercenary is not someone who goes to war for patriotic reasons. A mercenary is someone who kills in cold blood because he's paid to. So this man, Shambi, who was a murderer, hired by the United States and placed in a position of authority over the Congo, showed his nature by what he did with American money. He went out and hired some more killers. But because he was supported by America, he wasn't looked upon as a murderer or a killer, because the money that he was using to hire these killers from South Africa, they weren't looked upon as what they actually were. Because the American press, again, gave them an image of respectability. An image of respectability. Now, these mercenaries, under Shombi's sanction and support, were shooting African women, African children, African babies, as well as African men, indiscriminately, without any compunction whatsoever. No one got upset over the loss of thousands of Congolese lives. They only got upset when the lives of a few whites were at stake. Because when the lives of the whites were at stake, immediately the press again brought your sentiment to bear by referring to these whites as innocent hostages, as nuns and priests and missionaries, and it gave them an image that you would sympathize with. I must point this out because it shows you how tricky the press can be. The press can make you not have any sympathy whatsoever for the deaths of thousands of people who look just like yourself. But at the same time, they make tears roll down your face over the few, over the loss of a few lives that don't look anything like yourself. They manipulate your feelings and manipulate your life. So all I say, I only use this to show the importance of you and me learning to think for ourselves, and especially think beyond what we read in the press. Because someone can take a press, a newspaper, and make you walk backward and you swear you're walking forward. They can say in the headlines that the sun is out, and you walk around out there in the rain without an umbrella, soaked, and won't think you're wet because the paper said the sun is out. They take they give an angelic image to a devil. They give a humanitarian image to a murder, to a murderer. They make the victim look like the criminal, and the criminal look like the victim. So my advice to you is, at the outstart, if any of you at any time think that you'll ever be placed in a position of responsibility, once you are placed in that position of responsibility, you owe it to others as well as to yourself. Be careful about letting others make your mind up for you. You have to learn how to see for yourself, hear for yourself, and think for yourself, and then judge for yourself. Secondly, I would like to say this concerning my own personal self. Whose image they projected in their own life. I'm against any form of racism, any form. I fight against racism no matter where it is. I don't believe in fighting against racism non-violently. I know you're against racism too. We're all against racism. The only difference between you and me is you want to fight racism and racists non-violently and lovingly. And I'll fight them the way they fight me. Whatever weapon they use, that's the way I use them. This is the only difference between us. We're all against it. We're all against our enemy. But some of you have been taught to love your enemy and forgive him, and submit to his brutality with no struggle. And I don't go for that. I go for talking the kind of language that he talks. I believe that a racist only knows one language. And you can't communicate with a person unless you use the language that they use. If a man is speaking French, you can talk German all night long. You won't reach him. He doesn't even know what you're talking about. You have to find out what kind of language does he use. And when you find out what kind of language he uses, you know what kind of language he understands, and then you put it to him in the language that he understands. And in this country where you and I, as is proven in the situation in Mississippi yesterday, where they brutally and in cold blood murder three persons, three humans, and then the whole world knows who is guilty, and they have the audacity to pretend to be reaching out and arresting these persons, knowing when they arrest them that they're going to turn them loose, why, I say this. These men don't understand that kind of language. They don't use the law. They don't recognize the law. They are lawmen. And they don't respect your and my right where the law is concerned. They don't understand that language. So when you come to them in that language, you're wasting your time. You don't even communicate. You're talking where they are. There's only one language they know. And like I say, I'm for peace. And I'm against violence. But I'm not against using it to protect our people from the violence that they're the victims of in this country or anywhere else on this earth. I'm a Muslim, which means my religion is Islam. I believe in Allah. I believe in all of the prophets, whoever represented God on this earth. I believe what Muslims believe: prayer, fasting, charity, and the pilgrimage to the Holy Land, Mecca, which I've been fortunate to make four or five times. I've been fortunate to make twice, but while I was there, I went on into Mecca 4 or 5 different times. I believe in the brotherhood of man, all men. But I don't believe in brotherhood with anybody who doesn't want brotherhood with me. This is our only difference. I believe in treating people right. But I'm not going to waste my time trying to treat someone right who doesn't know how to return that treatment. This is the only difference between you and me. You believe in treating everybody right, whether they put a rope around your neck or whether they put you in a grave. Well, I can't, my belief isn't that strong. I believe in the brotherhood of man, but I think that anybody who wants to lynch a Negro is not qualified for that brotherhood, and I don't put forth any effort to get them into that brotherhood. This is probably the only difference. You want to save him, and I don't. Despite the fact that I believe in the brotherhood of man as a Muslim, in the religion of Islam, there's one fact also that I can't overlook, and that's I'm an Afro-American. And by being an Afro-American, we have problems that go well beyond religion. We have problems that a religious organization in itself can't solve. And we have problems that no one organization can solve or no one leader can solve. We have a problem that's going to take the combined effort of every leader and every organization if we're going to get to a solution. I believe that. And for that reason, I don't believe that as a Muslim that it's possible for me to bring my religion into any kind of discussion with people who are not Muslims without causing more division, dissension, and animosity and hostility, and we will only be involved in a self-defeating action. So, based upon that, there's a group of us that have formed an organization. Besides being Muslims, we have gotten together and formed an organization that has nothing to do with religion at all. And it's known as the Organization of Afro-American Unity. And in this organization, we involve ourselves in the complete struggle of the Afro-American in this country, and our purpose in becoming involved with a non-religious group, it gives us the latitude to use any means necessary in order to bring an end to the injustices that we are confronted by. I believe in any means necessary. I believe that the injustice that we have suffered and are suffering and will continue to suffer will never be brought to a halt as long as we put ourselves in a straitjacket when we are fighting against those injustices. And for that reason, those of us in the Organization of Afro-American Unity have adopted as our slogan, by any means necessary. And we feel that we're justified. Whenever someone is treating you in a criminal way, an illegal way, in an immoral way, why, you are well within your rights to use anything at your disposal to bring an end to that unjust, illegal, and immoral condition that you're being victimized by. I believe that. And for this reason, we try and be as peaceful and as law-abiding and as legal and as respectable as possible. But at the same time, I believe that it's time for black people in this country to obey the law. But at the same time, when anybody is breaking the law, and breaking you in my neck and cutting off you in my life, it's the government itself, which is supposed to be our protector, shows that it is unable or unwilling to protect us, then we have to band together and protect ourselves. And when we do it like that, we will find that we'll get more respect and we'll be farther down the road toward freedom, toward recognition and toward respect as human beings. But as long as we dilly-dally and try and appear that we're more moral than anybody else by taking the beating without fighting back, why, people will continue to refer to us as very moral persons and very well-disciplined persons. But at the same time, we'll be just as far back 100 years from now as we are right, as we are today. So I believe that fighting against those who fight against us is the best course of action in any situation. Not fighting against anybody, but fighting against anybody who fights against us. And if the government doesn't want Negroes fighting against anybody who fights against us, then the government should do its job. The government shouldn't put the weight on us. If the Ku Klux Klan in Mississippi is criminal, and carrying on criminal activities to the point of murder against black people, then I think that if black people are men, human beings, the same as anybody else, you and I should have the right to do the same thing in defense of our lives and our property that all other human beings on this earth do in defense of their lives and in defense of their property. And that is to talk the language that the Klan understands. So I must emphasize that we are dealing with a powerful enemy. And again, I'm not an anti-American. I'm not anti-American or un-American. I think there are plenty of good people in America. But there are also plenty of bad people in America. And the bad ones are the ones who seem to have all the power and be in these positions to block things that you and I need. So because this is the situation, you and I have to reserve the right to do what is necessary to bring an end to that situation. And it doesn't mean that I am one who would advocate violence, but at the same time, I'm not against using violence in self-defense. In self-defense. Not initiating violence, but violence in self-defense. And I don't even call it violence when it's in self-defense. It's self-defense. I call it intelligence. So now, what does the African, what impact or effect does the African Revolution have upon you and me? How does it fit? Number one, if you go back to 1959, prior to 1959, many of us didn't want to be identified with Africa in any way, not even indirectly or remotely. The best way to curse one of us out was call us an African. We'd get insulted. That's a drag. But if you notice, since 1959 and in more recent years, that's changing. It's changing among us subconsciously faster than we even realize it. And the reason for this change is, prior to 1959, the African image was not created by Africans. The image of Africa wasn't created by Africans. The image of Africa was created by someone who was an enemy to Africa. Africa was dominated by Europeans, by European powers, by Britain and France and Belgium and Portugal and some of these other places up there in Europe. And these Europeans had gotten together in conjunction with America and created a very negative image of Africa and had projected this negative image abroad. Negative in that they projected Africa as a jungle, a place filled with animals, savages, and cannibals. The image of Africa was made hateful. And the image of the African was made hateful. So that there were 22 million of us in America of African origin, African descent, African ancestry, who actually shunned Africa because the image that was projected to us of Africa was a hateful image, a negative image. And we didn't realize that as soon as we were made to hate Africa and the image of the African, we also hated the image of ourselves. It was impossible for us to hate the African and the image of Africa without also hating the image of ourselves. You can't hate the roots and not hate the tree. You can't hate Africa, the land where you and I originated, without ending up hating your and myself. And the man knew that. He did it so skillfully and so trickily that as soon as we begin to hate Africa and the African, we begin to hate